A certain Dhammapada stanza comes to mind. I'll share it with you and you can try and remember it. The meaning of this stanza is that it is far better to live one's life in such a way that it brings life meaning and worth and value. One day lived with the higher truth is far greater, far valuable than 100 years lived without touching, without coming into contact, without reflecting on the higher truth, on the Dhamma. You keep coming back time and time again, so it's not just one day, but now for how many weeks? In the Buddha's words, what he says is, if you live just one day with the Dhamma, that is far greater than 100 years lived without it. You got to think about how many people live their lives, ladies and gentlemen, thinking that it brings them meaning and purpose, but unfortunately it's just a life lived with not much meaning at all. Because if it's a life where you're born crying and then you die crying, what have you really achieved out of it? This is the meaning of the Dhammapada stanza. I will share it with you when a few other people have come into the room so that they can all learn it. A few people are still making their way into the room. But that's the meaning of the stanza. So now, in the Buddha's eyes, take a moment to think about how much meaning you bring to your lives in the Buddha's eyes. Because you see, it matters not what other people think of you. If the Buddha would scorn you, because we know he is the one who knows it all. We know, not just because he is a religious leader, not just because he is the great man who taught us the philosophy that we learn and study and practice, but we know he is the Buddha. He is the omniscient one. He knows it all, he sees it all, he understands it all. So if the Buddha says something, it has to be true. He doesn't utter anything that is untrue. So he says, a life lived, just one day, where you reflect on the Dhamma, live by the Dhamma, is a life that is far more valuable, of a lot more worth, incredibly more valuable than 100 years lived without the Dhamma. And there's a reason for that. Those who keep coming back are beginning to understand the reason behind it. Because you know the purpose of your lives is fulfillment. You know the purpose of your lives is contentment. You know the purpose of your lives is happiness. So people go through life trying to achieve these things, but it only seems like they're working towards it but never achieving it. That's why a man can live 100 years and they can still die crying. But in those 100 years, if you just take a look back, if you look back at how they spent those 100 years, they would have spent doing a lot of things. Laboring, working really hard, working their socks off, trying to achieve happiness. But it is not achieved because they're just not doing the right things. Simple as that. Simple as that. If someone asks you to work out a sum, and what you had to do was to add two numbers, If you kept dividing one number by the other, not once, not twice, not 10 times, 100 times, if not 1,000,000 times, you're never going to get to the right answer, because what you have to do is what you have to do. People spend their lives doing things that have no meaning. It has no purpose. I often tell you, when you want to eat ice cream, eating an ice cream is not the answer. If it were, then you would only have to eat it once. But it never makes you happy. That's why you keep going back. First time ice cream, next time chocolate, next time cake, and then back to ice cream. C'est ça la vie, eh? And so life goes on. This is what we're here to reflect on. Try and give our lives meaning. Yesterday I reminded our listeners at the monastery, live your life so that your lives become extraordinary. Give it extraordinary value. Most people live very ordinary lives. You think the director or the chairman or perhaps the owner of a multi-billion-dollar conglomerate, you think he lives an extraordinary life? Not by the Buddha's eyes. Not in his view. But he owns a lot of land. Maybe he has an island to his name. Maybe he has an airline to his name. Maybe he has several businesses to his name and several thousand people work as his subordinates. He's well respected in society, well regarded. He's well off, but in the Buddha's eyes, if this is a life that has not come across a Dhamma, it is not of much value at all. Because that man, he was born crying, and he will die crying. So all that effort and work that was done in between these two events really accounted for not much at all. It would have given him some pleasure during his lifetime, but at the end of the day, ladies and gentlemen, you've got to do the accounts at the end of the financial year. So it matters not how much you have made throughout the year, where when you balance your books at the end of the year, if you have to write it in red, then that's the year in which you've made a loss. What most people do is they come into this world and they spend all the merits that they have earned so hard over the previous lives, and they go worse off than they came in. That's how most people spend their lives. But fortunately, we have come across the Buddha's teaching. And therefore, not just one day, but we can keep on revisiting his Dhamma and enriching our lives and give ourselves meaning and value. That's what we're here for. So with that purpose in mind, let us bring our palms together in veneration of he who has taught us the path to bringing value to our lives, to enriching our lives, to giving purpose to our lives, giving meaning to our lives. He who is our Father, our Master, and our Guide. He who is the fount of all wisdom, the epitome of compassion, and the source of loving kindness. We bring our palms together in veneration of the Supremely Enlightened One, the Perfect One, the Magnificent One. He is the Lord Buddha. As we do so, let us also remind ourselves that this is a pledge that we take upon ourselves, an oath that we make for ourselves to walk the path that he laid down for us, on the path to ultimate bliss. May we always be on the right path until that very day we achieve the ultimate bliss of Nibbana.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. నమో తస్స భగవతో అర్హతో సమ్మా సంబుద్ధస్స.
Right, looks like everyone's here now. It goes like this. Yoche vasa satang jive appasang dhammottamang. Yoche vasa satang jive appasang dhammottamang. Ekahang jivitang seyo pasato Dhammuttamam. That is the meaning I gave you earlier, and this is a Dhammapada stanza. So once again, Yoche Vasasatan Jive, that means a life lived for 100 years. Appasang Dhammuttamam. Appasa is to not come into contact with. That is what appassa is. You've heard of the word passa in the Paticchasamuppada, passapaccaya vedana and so on. So passa is to come into contact. Dhammuttamang is the uttama dhamma. What is uttama? The great dhamma. In other words, the higher truth. Ekahan jivitan seyo. Seyo is great. Ekahan is one. And jivitang, I think it's pretty obvious. One day lived. Passato dhammottamam. One day lived, coming into contact with the Dhamma. In other words, reflecting upon the Dhamma. See, I often tell you, ladies and gentlemen, just contemplate on how meritorious we all are. For you to be here, for all of us to have come into contact with the Buddha, Dhamma and the Sangha, most of us were born Buddhists, weren't we? What is to be born Buddhist? It's like to be born Sinhalese. If you are born to Sri Lankan parents, if you are born to Buddhist parents, then you call yourself a Sri Lankan Buddhist. But did we ever explore what it meant to be Buddhists? How many of us actually put in the time and effort to understand what does it actually mean to be a Buddhist? We thought it was a religion. Yes, Buddhism is probably a religion. In fact, on various forms and documents that you have to fill in, they'll probably ask you, what is your religion? And then you put it down. I remember when I first had to fill in such a form, I went and asked my mother, Mom, what religion am I? And she said, Putta, you're a Buddhist. Okay. How do you spell that? And so she spelled it out to me. And I wrote it in the form. But you know what? It never dawned on me to go and ask her, what does that actually mean? So we had a Buddha statue at home, as I'm sure all, if not most of you do. And then every Poya day we used to go to the temple. So it was customary that we had to pluck flowers. That's what we do, right? You go to the temple, you got to take some flowers with you. And you just can't just go swinging your arms and, you know, you've got to take something with you. Then you have to take some oil for the oil lamps. You've got to take some incense sticks. So, Buddhism seems to be, you know, it's like a... In as long as you do that, you observe the 5 precepts, you go to the temple, you light the oil lamp, you light some joss sticks, you lay down some flowers, and you get down on your knees. You've got to do that. You've got to get down on your knees. And then you go to worship. So someone asks you, why do you worship? I don't know, it's the Buddha, you got to worship him. He was a great man. So why do you worship great men? Why worship? What's the point? Why do you worship? Why do you do that? Why do you get on your knees in front of them? What's the point? And then you see some monks, they'll come along. You see them in the temple and you have to go and worship them as well. And sometimes you have to offer them something and you call it pirikara. It's almost like they expect it. This is the idea that was planted in our heads, like they expect it. So, you know, it's like when you go to see a friend, you got to take something, you know, a cake some bananas, right? Some curd, maybe a bottle of treacle. So in the same manner, when you go to the temple, you go to see the Swami, you've got to take something, right? So this became a very customary thing. And then it was also expected that once a month you've got to feed the monks. You have to go to the temple and you've got to feed the monks. In most Buddhist people's lives, that's it. People who call themselves Buddhists, that is the be-all and end-all of what Buddhism is. So once again, you observe the precepts. Number two, you go to the temple on Poya days. Don't go any other day. Just on Poya days. That's enough. Other times you have to be at home trying to earn yourself a living and, you know, do what makes sense and do what makes you happy. But on Poya days, you have to commit yourself to something holy, something spiritual, something, you know, higher and greater than yourself. So you take yourself to the temple, but you can't go just with nothing. You've got to take, what do you take? Flowers, oil for the lamps, incense sticks, and you've got to take something for the monks to keep them happy. And then also on New Year's Day, you can go to the temple because the monks bless you for the New Year. So all in all, that is what Buddhism, being a Buddhist, entails. Now you learn Buddhism at school, so there was a textbook. And which class do they start to teach you Buddhism? Grade? 5? 8? Grade 1. Grade 1. I forget because in grade 1 I was not in Sri Lanka, so I didn't have that privilege. I started learning Buddhism from grade 6. So by that time I'd missed most of the Buddha's life and all the good and great things that he'd done and the stories behind it. Oh, and then if you are a good parent, you have to send your children to the Dhammapasa. Yeah, where they learn for the Dharmacharya exam, the ultimate test. And if you become a Dharmacharya, then you can go on teaching the Dhamma. And that's about it, isn't it? As long as you've done those things and ticked all those boxes, you are well and truly a good Buddhist. Yoo-hoo, well done. By the Buddha's book, a good Buddhist doesn't die crying. How do those things help one not to die crying? By those, in the Buddha's eyes, a good Buddhist is one who does not go to the four great hells, ever. One who is free from the four great hells, a good Buddhist. But how often have you heard of your maybe grandparents, maybe relations in your own family, when they've passed away, and sometimes, you know, they come back and they cause you trouble, all sorts of trouble. Then you have to bring a kattadiya. These things happen all over the country. So, have they been really good Buddhists? Is a question to ask. And then later on it also became fashionable that a good Buddhist should do one other thing, and that is to be vegetarian. So I thought the same myself. So at one point in my life, I also became a strict vegetarian initially. And then, first I was a strict vegetarian at one point in my life. And then I then became a pretend vegetarian. When people used to ask me, are you vegetarian? Oh, yeah, I'm vegetarian. But when no one's watching, I know, it makes me giggle as well. Because I didn't know how to fight the urge. Everyone else at home, you know, they consumed meat, but I thought that I was a good Buddhist, so I had to become vegetarian. So therefore, to everybody else, I was a vegetarian, but when no one else was watching, then I had it on my own terms. Such was the life of someone who considered himself a good Buddhist. You know, we need to redefine what being a Buddhist is. Otherwise, you know, they just stack it high and sell it cheap. Buddhism is not like that. I'm not speaking about the religion. There are various practices and all sorts of things that go on in the name of Buddhism, and may they go on forever and ever and ever. We don't care about that. It's not okay. It's fine. I've got no qualms about that. But if you are a true Buddhist, ladies and gentlemen, you need to be someone who doesn't suffer. Because what was the first discourse that the Buddha gave upon him attaining enlightenment? The first noble truth of suffering. That's what he said, right? Did he not make it clear to you in no uncertain terms that the purpose of my advent into this human realm is to deliver human beings and all sentient beings who are within reach of this teaching, deliver them from suffering? That was his first teaching. I am here, he said, in no uncertain terms, to free you all from suffering. That is the message that I bring you. So how can a man who dies crying consider himself a good Buddhist? Conventionally, yes, I have no arguments about that. But I'm talking about the more profound meaning of being a Buddhist. I need all of you to aspire to that. That is the purpose of my coming here. Because you know what? If you want to just be a conventional Buddhist, go to the temple on a poor day, observe the 5 precepts, offer the alms to the monks once a month, take some pilikara to the temple, offer some flowers, you know, do the oil lamp thing, do the incense thing, maybe even have a Buddha statue at home and do your offerings every day with Achyamma, right? If that's what you want to keep doing, then actually I don't need to be coming here every day. You don't need to be coming here every day. I think we all knew how to do all that without my help. So we are here to aspire for something more than that. I need you to die as good Buddhists. But for that, you have to live as good Buddhists. So then we need to understand what being a good Buddhist is. The degree to which you have saved yourself from suffering, you are free from suffering, is the degree to which you are a good Buddhist. So now, can you ask me whether you are a good Buddhist? Do you think I'll be able to give you a reasonable answer? You come up to me and ask me, Swami Nohansa, you get down on your knees, put your hands together and answer, Venerable Sir, I've been listening to your Dhamma talks for so long. Am I now a good Buddhist? How do you think I'm going to be able to answer that question? I'll look at you I'll look at your face and then go, Om, ring, 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 rang. And then can I tell you that you are a good Buddhist? Well, there are some other ways in which good Buddhists get a certificate. You can ask, Nona, how much are you willing to offer? That's another way to get a certificate to say that you are a good Buddhist. Apparently there are places where they give you a certificate that says you are a Sotapanna. You just have to go in wearing Giorgio Armani or carry a Louis Vuitton bag with you, and then they give you a certificate saying that you are a Sotapanna. If you get out of a Merc or a Mercedes, then you even get an Anagami certificate. It's very interesting. Very interesting. I wonder if you get out of a Porsche, wonder what you might, maybe an Arahant certificate. Or maybe you need to get out of your private jet for that, I don't know. You know what, ladies and gentlemen? Let's cut to the chase. Let's cut out all that crap. All that nonsense. There is nothing more practical than Buddha's philosophy. This is the most practical thing I've ever come across in my life. It is about you and nothing else. If there is anything more practical than this, I can't think of anything. This is the most practical thing. It's about how much you have transformed from a being who used to suffer to one who doesn't suffer anymore. That is the simple test. So this is not a question that I can answer on your behalf. Only you have the answer to this. Do you suffer? If you suffer, then you still have work to do. If you don't suffer, then you've already got something done for yourselves. If you don't know what to do when you suffer, You haven't even started. You haven't even embarked on the journey of becoming a Buddhist. Because people out there, when they suffer, they don't know what to do. Don't you see people fighting each other? All the time. See, on a bus, on the train, on the street, at the shops, what do people do? If they feel offended, what is the normal reaction? What is the default reaction that mankind exhibits? An eye for an eye, isn't it? So much so that if you don't retaliate, if you don't fight back, it is considered considered belittling yourself, undermining yourself. It's like the law of the jungle. This is how people consider they should live their lives. To earn respect is to show your prowess and to show that you are better than others. You don't meddle with them. You don't mess about with them. One who lives a life like that, they believe they are somehow superior to others. But this is not how the Buddha taught one's life should be lived. Let's redefine what being a good Buddhist is. Only hurt people hurt people. You've heard me say that before. I'll write it on the board. Because this is such an important thing. Do you agree with me on this statement? Do you? Do all of you agree with me on this? Hurt people hurt people? So if you are hurt, what is the tendency? To hurt someone else. Either by speech, or by action, or even by thought. You can curse someone. Mentally. You can wish them unwell. You can wish them evil. Mentally. You don't say anything. This is what happens most of the time. In civil society, we don't say things out loud. We give them a frown, but that's as far as we are willing to go. Because we don't have the courage to do any more than that, most people. Or, in civil society, you're not supposed to. But mentally, you're doing all sorts of things. if people who thought bad of you mentally were given the chance to do all that to you, you'd be long dead. Don't you agree with me? You'd be long dead. If people were given the chance to do all that they thought, all evilness that they thought about you, if they actually had the chance to do that to you, ladies and gentlemen, you'd be long dead. And equally on the other side. If people who had sensual, lustful thoughts about you were given the chance to do all that to you, you'd have been raped more times than the hairs on your head by this point. This is the honest truth. Women in the house, do you know how many times you get raped as you walk along the streets by people who do it mentally? Try going on a bus, catching a train, walking along the streets. They hurt people. I'm not saying they're bad people. I'm just saying they're hurt people. They're hurt. The only reason they don't act out what they think is they know that the consequences of that are going to be dire. They probably get locked up in a prison cell somewhere, or the defame that is going to bring them, or their families. If they could just ignore and forget all that, chances are you wouldn't come out unscathed. That's not because they're bad once again. It's only because they're hurt. Hurt people know only one thing to do. Hurt other people. It goes both ways. How many times have you caught people ogling you? Again, I'm not saying they're bad people. Eyeing you up and down. How many times have you felt the need to tell them, hey dude, my eyes are up here. Can you have compassion towards them? That makes you a good Buddhist. If when someone does that to you, you can have compassion towards them because you're not hurt, that's what I'm talking about. Because when you are the victim of that, if you are hurt, now here's what you want to do. You want to hurt them. But it takes a great person, someone who has come across the Dhamma, to understand what you give is what you get. What goes around comes around. I have no one but myself to blame for this. No one. This is not your fault, it's in fact not the aircon's fault. This is just the environment that's drawing the vipaka. That's all. That's why I'm trying to change the environment to see if the vipaka stops. That's all I'm doing. The karma has already been done. Maybe I said something so terrible that made someone speechless. And now as I try to speak, I'm interrupted. You know, like when you say sometimes something to some people, or you have experiences, you feel like a lump in your throat. Yeah, when someone says something to you, and it's just so heartbreaking, it leaves a lump in your throat, and you say, you know, God, he said something, and I don't know what happened to me. I just couldn't speak. I was speechless. It was such a terrible thing to say. How could he say something like that? It almost felt like I had a lump in my throat. Perhaps it was I who did that some time ago, and now, when I try to speak, I can't get the words out. Like I said, what goes around comes around. All of this is my doing. Can you man up to accept the responsibility for your own results? Can you woman up and accept responsibility for your own results? Because then you have no one to point your finger at but yourself. Now there are no grudges. No battles to pick. No eye for an eye. No retaliation. No akkochimang avadimang. No ajinimang ahasime. No hatred. No anger. No resentment. Complete and total responsibility accepted. Everything I'd done is what comes back to me. People often think like this when good things happen to them. You know, someone wins the lottery, what do they say? Well, people like us, you know, what else do you expect? But when a mother loses her child, what does she look up and say to the gods up there? Why? Why what? Why? Me. Of all people, why me? I have lived such a holy life. I have been the best mother a mother can be. Why me, God? Why me? They don't ask that when they win the lottery, do they? Why me? Who else but me? Is what they say then. That is being partisan. That is not totally being okay with anything. Take responsibility for anything that happens to you. You know, if some of you are nearing, excuse me, some of you are now towards the elderly years of your life. You're beginning to pick up those aches and pains that come to you, and you're sometimes, you know, you're trying to get treatment for it, but no matter how much you treat them, it's not going away. You've been to the specialists, you've been to the doctors, you've had the scans done, you've had the MRIs done, you have this done, you had that done, you even went abroad to get the best treatment you could afford. Find the best consultants, but no matter how much treatment they do, they still can't find the cause of your pain. You know, there comes a point where you have to say, accept it. I know people like that. You know what happens if you can't accept that? You start to build up resentment. And it works in this way. First of all, you resent. This is going to be a hard pill to swallow, but this is how it is in reality. So forgive me for laying it bare. First of all, you begin to resent those who do not suffer with the same symptoms that you do. You don't speak it out, but these are thoughts that begin to fester in your mind. You know, generally, when you're in a bit of a hard place, right? If you're going through some hardship, and you have someone who walks up to you and tries to soothe you, generally, what do you expect them to say? Or what do you just, you know, think about it from your point of view? If you are supposed to go and, you know, pacify a friend who's been going through some hardship, let's say they've lost someone, generally, what do you do? What do you say to them? You know, these things happen. I've been through similar. Yeah? So you're trying to empathize with them. You tell them, you know, it's okay, you're not the only one. I've been through the same thing. By saying this, you're trying to give them a sense of relief. Because as they say, a problem halved is a problem solved. This is not a great virtue, by the way. It's a vice. People are happy when hardship comes to them to know that it also comes to other people. How can that be compassion? How can that be a sign of greatness? I don't know whether it's to this audience I mentioned this example. Usually when someone gets a cancer and they go through chemotherapy, radiotherapy, whatnot, they start losing their hair. And one of the things they have to do is what? Shave their heads. Yeah? So usually when someone shaves their head, for support, moral support, their friends, sometimes members of the family, they do the same. And that makes them feel better. Like I said, this is a hard, tough pill to swallow. And I don't mean to offend anyone. I'm just trying to show you the human condition. Think about how the mind works. I need you to aspire to greater than this. Don't be that one who expects someone else to shave their heads off in case you get a cancer one day. Just because you listen to the Dhamma doesn't mean you become immune to that. Maybe there's a cancer happening, waiting to happen to you next week. You fall unconscious, they take you to the doctor. The doctor gives you a scan and says, it's been going on for the last 3 months. Did you only just find out? Whether you're a good Buddhist or not, you'll be able to check in that moment. At that moment, do you suffer? What is happening to you physically, is that affecting you mentally? You see, this physical and mental, there's a divide between these two. What connects these two things together is ignorance and attachment. So that when pain comes to the physical body, if it affects the mind, that is not the sign of a good Buddhist. A good Buddhist is able to see the physical body as the body and the mind as the mind. One does not affect the other. But right now, perhaps even something that happens to your children bothers you. It hurts you. If your child gets into a fight at school and he or she comes home and says, Amma, you know what happened today? What's that black eye? What happened? Well, someone knocked me. Someone hit me. Someone attacked me. If that causes anger within you, if that ignites anger within you, then there is the evidence that there is more work you need to do to become a good Buddhist. You're not the one who's been attacked. Your child is. So how does that hurt you? Because you'll say, that is my child. That is the answer. How do you know it's your child? You believe that's your child. So how does something that happened to your child hurt you? How does something that happens to your house hurt you? How does something that happens to your car hurt you? How does something that happened to your property hurt you? You and that are not the same. Now, in your previous birth, you also had children, right? For those of you who believe still that there was a previous life previous to this. Then you died, and now you're born. Now you are a brand new person. Let's just assume that when you died in your last birth, your children were very young. Let's say they were just infants. So if you've lived now, 20 years, 25 years, they're probably, by this point, about 30, 40, maybe that time. That sort of age period going on. Now, you know, one of them gets run over by a car. Does that hurt you? Does it bother you? It doesn't. So the fact that they are your child doesn't hurt you. What hurts you is you thinking that that is your child. Your belief that it's your child. There is no other connection than your own perception. It is this perception that you need to tweak, redefine, recalibrate, re-engineer. Because right now, it's flawed. It's been hijacked by ignorance and attachment. And therefore, when things happen to the objects and the people around you, ladies and gentlemen, they affect you. Just look at it. Don't they affect you? So therefore, your happiness is not independent. It's like you're flying like a kite, but the strings are attached to so many people and objects on the ground. And if they let go, that's it. You're a lost cause. If you're the kite, just have a think about how many strings you're attached to. Right now, you're flying happy, soaring the sky, showing yourself off to everyone, and you're happy and you're delightful. But do remember that there are so many strings attached to you. So you're not a no strings attached. You have many strings attached. Each of these strings determine your tomorrow. Right now you're okay. In this state of mind, you're in this good mood right now because you think, you don't know really, you think that everything at home is fine. One call is all it takes, doesn't it? To upset you. What if you get a call or your text message from your mom right now? What if you get a text message from your sibling right now? Emergency. Dad's been taken to hospital. If dad's been taken to hospital, you getting to the hospital is one thing. That's your duty, that's your responsibility. But on your way to the hospital, your heart is beating like the engine of the car. It's as heated up as the engine of the car. How so? Now there's not just one casualty, there's another casualty waiting to happen. You think people have not had accidents on the way to seeing someone who has had an accident and in hospital? How so? If you're a parent right now, you're okay because you think your children are fine. Maybe you don't even know it, but your child has started to do drugs. One day you're going to find out. And that one day can come tomorrow. It can come in a week's time. It can come in 2 years' time when he's ruined himself completely. And he goes into a state of shock. They take him to the hospital and then they figure out that he's been doing drugs. How does that leave you as a parent? Even the thought of it right now sends a shiver down your spine, does it not? Just the thought of it. If your little one just runs across the street and you see a car coming, your heart skips a beat, doesn't it? See, you suffer. So what should a good parent do? What should a good Buddhist parent do? Look away when the child runs across the street and you see traffic approaching? No. Try and save the child. I'm not talking about what you do physically. I'm not talking about you calculating the required steps to save the child. I'm not talking about that. What I'm talking about is how you fire up emotionally. There's a fire that ignites within you. There's a furnace that ignites within you and it consumes you entirely, sometimes to the point where you can't think rationally. When you're emotional, do you think rationally? Honestly, answer this question for me, all of you. When you're emotional, do you think rationally? You can't think rationally because you're prejudiced. The Buddha says this himself, Chanda, Dosa, Bhaya, Moha. These are the four prejudices that take over your mind. When these four things happen within you, ladies and gentlemen, try your best not to take any decisions. Because whatever decisions you have made in those moments will tend to be the wrong decision. Chanda is great desire for something. Remember the last time you had a great desire for something and you put a ring on it? And now, how do you feel about that? I'm just jesting. You got married to the perfect woman. You got married to the perfect husband. I'm just jesting. Okay, it's the person sat next to you I'm talking about. You're fine. That is chanda, great desire. When great desire takes over your heart, I want you to start thinking about why the Buddha says, in these moments, don't take decisions. Or the decisions that you take are going to be flawed. They're not going to be the right choices. Because in this moment, ladies and gentlemen, you can't calculate the situation. You can't take a proper evaluation of the situation. Because all you can think of is, I am vexing, help. This is a sinking man. When you're sinking, you just clutch onto any straw, don't you? Just imagine two of you, you're out swimming in the sea, right? A great wave comes and now the two of you are drowning. When you try to keep yourself afloat, can you, I'm not asking do you, I'm asking can you sensibly, rationally think about how your actions are going to affect the other person? In that moment where you're about to suffocate, you're about to drown and die, can you actually think about the other person? What do you tend to do? Even if it means that you're going to have to climb over the other person's body, you're just going to try and keep yourself safe. It's a natural reaction. The same thing happens in the mind. When the mind begins to vex out of great desire, the mind loses all rational thinking. That's why one of the worst things you can do is make decisions about yourself or others around you in moments where you feel great desire for something. Proof of this? Your blood reports. No? Didn't the doctor tell you you're not supposed to be eating sugar? Cut out the fatty foods, cut out the sugary foods, cut out the oily foods, but in moments of great desire, you make a choice. You make a decision, and has it been the right choice? No. How many times have you walked up to the fridge and you knew you shouldn't be opening that freezer? Because you know there's a demon inside. Or there's a lamp inside, and once you rub that lamp, the demon within you awakens. So you shouldn't be opening the freezer. But you still, nonetheless, you open the freezer. You think, I'm just opening it. I'm not even touching it. I'm just opening it, right? What's so bad about that? So you open it. Now, it's out there, staring at you, fruit and nut. Then you say, well, I just want to touch it. And no harm can come out of touching it, right? I'm just touching it. I just want to see how heavy. I just want to see how much is left in it. That's all. So you take it out of the freezer. All this while you're thinking, the doctor said no. Doctor said no. Doctor said no. I am diabetic. Then you open the lid to see whether it's frozen. As if you have to check that. You open the lid. And then you look into it. And it looks at you. And you look at it. And it looks at you. And it says, please. And then you go, yes, please. And then what happens? A few moments later, what happens? You're digging into it. Before you know it, the tub is over, finished, done. And then you are locked into regret. Then you know, oh, now the doctor is going to ask me, how come the blood report is so high? And then I have to answer to him. Then you start coming up with excuses. See, chanda, desire. In a moment of desire, you made a decision and now you have to live with it. What about when sensual lust takes over? Sometimes maybe you have been victims of this. Sometimes maybe you have been the perpetrators of this. Under this roof, everyone's equal. I don't see sinners. I don't see haters. I just see hurt people. That's all I see. Hurt people. You're hurt because of ignorance and attachment. And I'm trying to help redeem yourselves. So sometimes maybe you were the victims, maybe you were the perpetrators. Lust took over. You knew it was forbidden. It's wrong. I shouldn't be doing this. How am I going to answer to my wife? How am I going to answer to my husband? How am I going to answer to my mother? I myself, I have a sister. How can I do something like this? But inside, the furnace was ignited. And now, every time you look at it, it keeps adding fuel to the fire. But you can't look away either. You have your eyes fixed. You try to turn around, but no, it's not working. They say the mind is willing, but the flesh is weak. Not so. The flesh is more than willing. It's the mind that is weak. If the mind were to send just one command to your eyes to shut itself, the eyes would comply, no questions asked. If the mind would just send one command, turn your head around and walk out this moment, otherwise something terrible is going to happen, the body is more than willing to adhere and comply. But the mind is not weak, is not strong enough, the mind is weak. Perhaps you were the victim. Perhaps you were the perpetrator. And you know what happened then. Sorry if I'm rubbing an old wound. Maybe a part of your life you're trying to forget and trying to forgive yourself. I'm here to try and teach you how to be okay with that. Because forgetting doesn't always work, does it? Because the next thing is going to remind you of it. How can you forget something that has already happened? Either they have to treat your brains and take some part out of it so that you can't be reminded of it, or you've got to learn to be okay with what happened in the past. This is what I'm trying to help you do, ladies and gentlemen. I can't expect you to, I'm not a hypnotizer. Let's go back to your childhood. Now let's forget what all those things that happened in your childhood. And now let's come back into the 3-2-1. You're back in the room. You forget everything. No. I want to teach you to be okay with that. That's what I said. This cough, now it's gone. See? All I did was change the environment. But the karma is still there. Switch this back on again and I'll start coughing. The karma is still there. But, see, this is the beauty of being born human. If I were an animal, if I were a dog, I wouldn't know what to do about it. This is why I always say, give your human lives great value, ladies and gentlemen. Don't undermine it, because you have the choices that you can make. You can choose your vipaka. Only beings in the Sugati worlds, only beings in the blissful plane can choose their vipaka. They also have the choice of karma. Which karmas do I do? They have the choice of that. They also have the choice of vipaka. To a great degree, I can't say to every degree, but to a great degree they have. I mean, for instance, you can't choose not to feel hunger. That's not a choice you have. It will always come. But for how long you remain hungry, that you can choose. That's why when we were younger, our parents said, study. Study hard. So you can earn yourself a good living so that you're never left hungry. That they taught us. So we have the choice. But when the mind is vexing, you can't make a rational choice. Do you understand what I mean by when the mind is vexing? When the mind goes into a state of a, it feels a sense of a void. Not a void, a void. It feels like something's lacking. It goes into a state of yearning, urge, an urge for something. In these moments, you are weak. You know, when you see a young man dressed up, he's preparing himself to go see his girlfriend, brush his hair, got his makeup on, nicely dressed, bouquet of flowers in his hand and box of chocolates in his other hand, right? He's waiting for that moment to see his girlfriend. He looks very presentable. And ask anyone else and they'll say, well, he looks very dapper. Look at him. Very smart, very elegant, very handsome. Now look at him through the lens of the Dhamma. Look at the mind. That mind is so feeble, so weak, that to achieve happiness, it needs someone else to say yes. Ladies in the house, young girls, and daughters, if a man ever walks up to you and gets on his knees and says, will you make me happy? If you be mine, I will make you happy. This is not a man that can ever make you happy. Don't fall for it. You can if you want to, but it's my duty to inform you. Make an informed choice. Because here's the deal. The guy comes up to you and says, will you be mine? I propose to you, will you be mine? If you will be mine, I will always keep you happy. Now start thinking rationally. Just take an analytical view about this situation. You know, don't get emotional. Because if the heart jumps forward, now the brain locks down, right? So when that happens to you, tell your heart, well, dude, step back. Let me handle this. I'll make some decisions and then you go forward. So let your brain do the thinking and let you just stop being emotional about things. Because when you're emotional, you can't think rationally. You just agreed a moment ago. What is this boy, or girl for that matter, asking from you? What are they requesting? What are they beseeching? They're actually asking you to make them happy. Aren't they? This boy is asking you to make them happy. So if they're asking you to make them happy, how on earth are they going to make you happy? Think about it. But what is the promise that they're making right now? Don't get me wrong, I've been there, born. I've been to the gig. I bought the shirt. I know what it feels like, right? But I don't want you, those who are yet to make those decisions. I was going to say foolish decisions. Then I thought maybe it'd be too harsh. Did I just say that? I speak to you. Please think rationally. Think rationally and make the right choices about your lives. I'm not saying don't say yes or say no. That's not up to me. It's all up to you. Because whatever choices you make, you have to live with the consequences of that. Good or bad. Either reward or regret, you're going to have to live with that. But as a member of the Sangha, as someone you trust to share with you good advice, here's what I have to give you. Whenever you have to make such choices, ask yourself, are you prejudiced? If you are prejudiced, this is the Satara Agati, as the Buddha puts it. The four prejudices. Chanda is a great one. Desire. If as you look at this boy, and you see how well he's dressed, and you think he's handsome, you forget the fact that this is only temporary. You completely forget the fact that he's only here in his best appearance. He's not always like this. Wait until the following morning. The day you tie that knot and he takes you home with him. None of this. You know, that was the first and the last time he got on his knee, right? Never after that. But here's what you thought. This time he's on one knee. Surely when we get home and get married, he'll be on both knees. That's not how it worked. not how it worked out. Please don't feel I'm mocking someone. I'm just saying, you know, I have a problem with the mind that is ridden with ignorance and attachment. I want you to make rational choices. Don't get all emotional. When you get emotional, it's very difficult to make a rational choice. And then if you make a choice and you make a decision, now you start taking actions. Actions bring results. Actions bring reactions. And that reaction is always destined to the object that enforces the action. So therefore, it's always going to come back to you. So think about this. The other one is bhaya, fear. Chanda dosa bhaya moha. Let's take bhaya, fear. When you're in a state of fear, you're afraid. Now your choices are not rational. And insurance companies know this very well. Salespeople, they know this very well. You know, that's why they say, even when they've got new stock of something, they've got plenty back in the storeroom, but they'll put a board up saying, last few. Tricks. What are they trying to instigate within you? Fear. Fear of a lost opportunity. Buy it now or never. See, fear, as the moment it hits you, you go into irrational thinking. Logic goes out the door. Now emotion kicks in. I'm showing you some of the reasons why you made choices in your lives which you later on went to regret. Sometimes, you know, have you never caught yourself lying because you were afraid of consequences, but then later you got caught out anyway? And then now you had two things to account for. Why you did the thing and why you lied. But it was fear that took over. In that moment, it didn't occur to you that honesty is the best policy. So you lied because fear took over. I mean, don't these things happen to you? You're looking at me like blank faces, like, you know, do these things happen to people, Swami Nasa? You must have had a troubled childhood. You're looking at me like that. Do you not go through these problems? Where you've caught yourself lying about something in a moment of fear? Someone comes and asks you, did you submit the report? And you remember, oops, I didn't submit the report. Yes, I did. When? Yesterday. Okay, well, it wasn't in my inbox. But no, I did. Maybe go check your spam. And now you remember, oh God, now what am I going to say? See, fear took over. You're scared that you probably lose your job or get told off for something. So therefore, fear took over and you started lying. Ekandhammang atitasya. Musavadasa jantuno. Vitinna paralokasya. Natti lokang akaryan. The Buddha says, one who can lie can commit any offense. Yes or no? One who can lie can commit any offense. Whether it's adultery, whether it's murder, whether it's theft, whatever. So if you lie, if you are a liar, please, once again, don't think that I'm accusing you of lies or being liars. Okay? I'm not accusing anybody. I love you all. That's why I come here, despite whatever difficulties we have. I want to help you elevate yourself to a state of extraordinariness. I don't want you to die ordinary. You were born ordinary. Maybe your parents were extraordinary, but you were born ordinary, very ordinary. Let's not die that way. Let's die extraordinary people. For that, you need to come out of some of the defilements. These defilements stop you from becoming extraordinary. This is the rust on the iron that you are. So let's get it off. Let's de-rust you. so that you can achieve a state of extraordinariness beyond any imagination, beyond your wildest imaginations. You know, you thought when you were younger you wanted to become a doctor. Why did you stop yourself at that? I mean, why set yourself such low goals, I ask you? Now, I know this goes against every principle in society, because in society, if you become a doctor, you know, it's like you're like God, right? Certainly in our culture. That is what I wanted to do. I am a doctor now, yes. Not that kind of doctor, different kind of doctor. But don't stop yourself there. There are so many doctors out there. I know now they're all leaving the country, but that's a different matter. That's not what I'm talking about. Don't stop yourself at that. I mean, becoming a doctor, yes, you know, 6 years of study and then further study, right? I understand. That is not an achievement to be shouting off the rooftops from. Become someone whose happiness is unshakable. Now, that's something to achieve. That's something to aspire to. Someone who doesn't feel lust, so that anyone can leave their wife with you without fear. How many friends do you have who you trust enough to leave your wife with? Let me turn that question around on its head. How many friends do you have who can leave their wives with you and trust you wholeheartedly? How many friends do you have who can leave their teenage daughters with you? No questions asked, no doubts, no nothing. Not just for the afternoon, they can leave you at your place overnight and nobody else is at home either. You'll say, customary, it's not right. Okay, I'll get a permission from the king to say it's okay for one day. Right, so one day, that's okay. But they can't trust you. Why can't they trust you? It's not because you're bad. It's because you're hurt. That's why. When you are hurt, you tend to hurt people. What do I mean by hurt? Vexed. When you're vexed, you tend to vex people. When there's a fire burning inside you, you tend to set people ablaze. That's what happens. It is what has happened. So you know that what I'm saying is true. You know there were times where you felt the urge, but you had to fight it because you knew it was bad. What would people think of me? What would society say? What would my children think of me? What would my siblings think of me? Please, once again, don't think that I'm speaking so I'm belittling any of you in this audience. No. I think very highly of all of you. This is why I want to free you from this. You know, good people in society are people who still feel the urges, but they don't execute it. These are what we call good people. Because just because you age doesn't mean karma and all these sensual lust and desire, these things, you know, they are shed away from the mind. It doesn't work like that. Then why do you need the Buddha? You don't need the Buddha then. You don't need the Dhamma. You don't need the Sangha. If age is sufficient to cleanse your mind of defilements, if as you age you feel the need for desire, you know, you feel the urge of desire and lust and all these things, if age can do it for you, then you don't need the Buddha. The Buddha never said so. What he says is 100 years lived. Now, that he's talking about a 100-year-old person, isn't he? 100 years lived without coming into contact with the Dhamma, in comparison to one day having come in contact with the Dhamma, those 100 years is worth nothing. Because a man doesn't improve himself. A man does not become free from defilements just as a measure or as a function of time. Because ultimately, ladies and gentlemen, there is nothing that works with time. Time is merely a mental manifestation. Because all you have are individual chittas, as we spoke about, I think, last week. All you have are individual chittas. Although you feel like you've lived for the last 60 years, no, you haven't. No, you haven't. It is only because in this moment, you have a chitta that arises, and in that chitta, you have something called jati that happens. And it starts with avidya. avidyapachya, sankharapachya, namarupachya, salayatanapachya, vinyana. Sorry, got it wrong. Avidyapachya, sankhara, sankharapachya, vinyana, vinyanapachya, namarupa, namarupachya, salayatana, salayatanapachya, passa, passapachya, vedana, vedanapachya, tanha, tanhapachya, upadana, upadanapachya, bhava, bhavapachya, jati. This happens in your chittas. And when that happens, ladies and gentlemen, you feel a sense of self. You believe that you exist. And when you feel, when you perceive that you exist, now you give you, you put yourself on a time scale. Because for someone who exists, it has to be defined with the dimension of time, right? Because the moment you say, I exist, there's a question that comes up in your mind. For how long? Since when? Till when? See? The moment you perceive existence, you have to define it in terms of time. So therefore, you create the dimension of time. It's a mental illusion. You create the dimension of time. So therefore, for you to think that I have lived for 60 years is a complete and utter fallacy. Not true. You haven't lived for 60 years. In this moment, you are a brand new chitta. That's it. You are a brand new chitta. Your bodies may be 60 years old, 50 years old, 40 years old, so be it. But not your minds. That's why what you don't want now, you'll want later. If it is the same you that didn't want it, why do you want it later? Why do you want it later? Why do you struggle to make your mind up with things? Because it is not you who's making anyone's mind up. That's why. Today you want to do something, and you decide you want to do it, and then you start planning for it. A week later, you think to yourself, nah, I don't want this. How does that even happen? If it's the same person who made the decision to do it, why is it a week later you feel like you don't want to do it? How can that happen? See, this Buddhist philosophy, it helps us to understand how the mind works. We are not talking about one mind that started when you were born and it's going to end when you die. It's not that. These are individual chittas that arise and pass away in a moment. So therefore, really, if any existence you had, it would only be momentary. That's who you are. This is the reality of who you are. So when you are in a state of fear, you are prejudiced. So you will make irrational choices, and choices you will then later have to regret. Now ask yourself, have you not found yourself in those situations? Plenty of times. Sometimes maybe there were opportunities that came up, but you didn't take them because you were afraid. And you skipped that opportunity. And then later on you thought to yourself, I should have taken that. I'll give you the best example. There are probably at least a handful of people here who are now halfway convinced that there's a better life than the lay life. At least halfway. Maybe there are some of you who are two-thirds convinced. But you know what's going on right now? Fear. There's fear that has taken over. You're afraid that you might lose your TV, and how are you going to live without it? Have you tried living without your TV? How do you know that life is unlivable without a TV? Have you tried with living without it? You know, honestly, now, give me, don't answer this question, but answer it in your own minds. If I could promise you for the rest of your life, food, lodgings, clothes, medicines, and the path to ultimate happiness, are you willing to come with me? Once again, food, lodgings, clothes, and medicine, whenever you're ill, not from the village doctor, take you to the best doctors. You don't even have to drive there, you get driven. You don't have to cook, it gets cooked. You don't have to build, they get built. The magic of the sasana. And to top all that, you get the ultimate path to happiness. Nothing you've done so far has gotten you happiness, but this cast iron guarantee, if you do it well, you will achieve happiness. Let's sign up. Shall I send a sheet of paper around? Put your names down. Let's go this afternoon when I'm done. What should I bring? A bicycle or a Leyland bus? Why? You're afraid. That's what you are. You're afraid to jump. Can I continue? You know, I'm not offending anyone, right? But I see new faces. Like when I see new faces, I get a little bit scared. Just like you. Sometimes I'm a little bit hesitant when I see new faces, only because I don't want to offend anyone. But sometimes it can come across like, Swami Nas is very offensive. He's very stern. He doesn't have any compassion. He doesn't like speak out of compassion and loving kindness. He's very tough. No, it's not like that. Ask the regulars. When I get off this seat, I'm like a baby. But when I'm on this seat, I'm here to heal you. I'm like the antiseptic. When you rub it on the wound, it hurts, it burns. But you got to know that it is only done out of kindness. My teacher spoke to me in this manner. Therefore, I made the right choices. Today, I have no regrets. I want you to live a life like that. So I ask you again this question. What are you afraid to leave behind? And because you are afraid to leave them behind, you are unable to make that choice. A choice that will take you to ultimate happiness. A choice that will take you to greatness. Why don't you become a Bhadrakachayana Maharathirininvahanse? Why are you just someone who worships her? Why can't you become someone who is worshipped? Ladies, gents, if you are someone who worships, you are an ordinary person. If you are someone who is worshipped, now you are an extraordinary person. How do you want to spend your life? Worshipping or being worshipped? The sasana elevates you to such a high state of spirituality and morality that even your parents get down on their knees before you. This is the only place it happens, in the Buddha sasana. Not even when you are a king, though your parents get down on their knees, they might curtsy, but that's the best you'll get. I'm not saying come into the sasana so that you get your parents to worship you. An old score to settle. No. But what I'm saying is, the sasana helps you to achieve that level of spirituality, that level of morality, that greatness. You become a chitta that is free of suffering. And then you become a force that can spread love and loving kindness to all. You know the way in which you care about your mother? I care about your mother as well today. And the other mother, and her mother, and his mother, and their mother at the back. But you care about your mother. That's why only your mother loves you. No other mother loves you, that's why. But every mother here loves me. I'm certain of that. Because I love all these mothers the same. Every father here loves me. They can care about me as they would their own son, because I care about them as I do my own father. But if you are bound to your father, if that is all you can think of, if your heart is so small that you can only fit one mother and one father inside it, very ordinary, very ordinary. Everyone can do that. I ask you to step forward to extraordinariness. Don't do things that everyone does. Do something different for a change. Just this life, I ask you. Just this life. Do something different for a change. Don't be ordinary. Do something different for a change. Just this life. If it doesn't work out this life, in your next life, you know, you go back to doing ordinary stuff. But when I can give you a cast iron guarantee that this is the path to happiness, ultimate happiness. I mean, I told you last week, ladies and gentlemen, look at me. If you need inspiration, I don't need to watch TV. But you still rely on it for your happiness. I don't need a woman by my side to keep me happy. But you still do. You need a man or a woman by your side to keep you happy. Because you haven't found the source of unconditional happiness. Right now your happiness is conditioned. You are the kite flying up with strings tied to the ground. You've given one to your husband, you've given one to your child, you've given one to your mother, you've given one to your father, you've given one to your boss, one to your sister, one to your brother, one to your best friend, one to your colleagues. And you're scared. You don't know that the grass is greener on the other side because you're not willing to jump. Some of you approach the fence. And then you look at the other side. Seems good, but this fence seems a bit too tall. If I jump over, will I be allowed to jump back? These are the questions you ask yourself. You know, here's the deal, right? As we keep doing these talks, now in a few weeks' time you'll be telling me, Swaminas, we've done a whole year now. So once we've done, 52 odd sermons, that'll be a year, right? If there's no one here that's willing to come and join this mission, I'm going to go back and speak to the organizers and say, let's get someone else to come and do these talks. Honestly. I want results. I'm not interested in increasing the number of monks or anagarikas or anything like that. That is not my objective. I want you to achieve ultimate happiness. If that's not happening, what am I doing? No pressure. None whatsoever. But I want you to understand the truth. And if that's not working out, then certainly I'm not doing something right either. In which case, you probably need to find someone else. The only reason, if you have no obligations, if you have no duties and responsibilities that are yours and yours alone and nobody else can fulfill that, if that is not the reason that you're staying at home, then the only other reason is you haven't understood the Dhamma yet. And if you haven't understood the Dhamma yet, then it's either your fault or my fault. I'm willing to accept that it is mine. Then we have to change the teacher. Because I see some young faces in the audience. And I'm wondering, what is it that's keeping you back? You're afraid. You're scared. You're scared of what you might lose. Will you lose the luxuries in life? Will you lose the opportunity to go and be with your friends, hang around with them, dance and sing and party? I tell you, ladies and gentlemen, once you understood the Dhamma, dancing will make no sense. What is this? Moving up, down, up, down, up, down. Now, what's missing is a bit of music. Now that's dancing. Now that's dancing. What? Is that what you're scared of losing out on? Ask yourself, why you do this? Why do you dance? Find purpose before you do things in life. Don't do it just because someone else has done it before you. Even if they've done it 1,000 times, doesn't mean you have to do it as well. Take it from a dancer, I know. Take it from a singer, I know. I used to sing and dance. But it was only until I realized that it made no sense. If happiness is what you seek, it makes no sense. If you're doing it for any other reason, go fly a kite. But if you're doing it for the purpose of happiness, it makes no sense. Makes no sense. Because happiness is not in there. Happiness is not in a dance, it's not in a song, it's not in a rhyme, it's not in a poem, it's not in a story. Happiness is unconditional happiness. You cannot find it in food, you cannot find it in flowers, you cannot find it in fragrance, you cannot find it in the air, you cannot find it anywhere. Happiness is within you. I need you to open your eyes and see this, absorb this, realize this. You bring your hands together, you worship the Buddha every day. I'm sure you do, right from, you know, when you were very young and your grandmother, you saw your grandmother doing it and you asked her, Achi, what are you doing? This is Lord Buddha. We have to worship him. Okay, how do I do that? Bring your hands together, put out like this. She would have probably held your palms together and you started worshiping. From that day on, you've been worshiping the Buddha. I ask you, to what gain? What have you gained out of it? Why do you worship the Buddha? Is it not because he achieved something great? Is it not that greatness that you worship? So why just keep worshipping it? Why don't you achieve it? Don't you have an uncle who's a doctor who inspired you to want to become one? And then what did you do? You just kept on worshipping your uncle. What did you do? You asked him, didn't you? Uncle, how do you become a doctor? I'd really love to become a doctor one day. How do you do that? And he said, no, Buddha, don't ask me how, just worship me. Just worship me. Is that what you did? No, you asked him how to become a doctor and then he told you. Well, first you've got to do your studies well. You've got to get some experience. You've got to develop your virtues. You've got to become compassionate towards your patients. You've got to be able to understand human feelings. So work on those things, Buddha, and one day you will eventually become one. Then you've got to go to med school. Then you've got to do all these exams. So then you took that advice on board and you started working on them. Now I ask you the same question. You started worshipping the Buddha before you started worshipping your uncle. From when you were very young. Remember, it's not the Buddha that you actually worshipped. You worshipped the Buddhahood that he had achieved. Because had he not achieved it, you wouldn't have worshipped him. Yes or no? Why do you not worship Hitler? But here's what he's going to do one day. He's going to become a Bodhisattva and then he's going to go on to become a Pacheka Buddha. That day, you're going to worship him. Today you don't. If I presented to you Devadatta, let's take Devadatta. If I presented to you Devadatta, you probably won't even get on your knees in front of him because you'd say, this is the person that shook the Buddha's blood. I love the Buddha. Right? I dote on the Buddha. And this man, although he's a monk, right, he shook the Buddha's blood. It is not my worship that he deserves, you might say. But the Buddha comes up to you and says, hey, yes, it is true that because he shook my blood, he is going to go into the four great hells and he's going to suffer there for a very long time. But do you know that once he comes back from the four great hells, he has enough merits to become a Pacheka Buddha? The day that the Devadatta becomes a Pacheka Buddha, are you not now going to get on your knees and worship him? So what is it you're worshipping then after all? Is it Devadattanas or greatness? It's greatness. So it is the greatness that you worship. So I ask you the question, ladies and gentlemen, if it's the greatness that within the Buddha you worshipped, if it is that you revered, then when are you going to aspire to that? Why don't you become a Buddha? Instead of just worshipping Buddhas. Instead of just being someone who worships, why don't you become someone who is worshipped? Why don't you achieve that greatness? Aspire to that. Because you all can. This is why I speak to you. And I urge you and I encourage you. You all can. There's nothing stopping you. Except yourself. Because you have fear. You're afraid to make that jump. There are young men and women who walk through our gates and they ask us, Swaminathan sir, I want to choose the life of an anagarika or an anagarika, but I'm a little bit scared. I'm a little bit afraid that what if I'm not able to get used to this lifestyle? We ask him, what lifestyle are you talking about? Not being able to spend time with my friends, for instance. Here's my answer to that. If you had to go abroad for your studies, what do you do? Then you leave behind your friends, no problem, right? And you make new friends. So in any environment, I mean, you're not trees, are you? You can make friends. Right? So in a new environment where you have other people, you start making new friends. And these friends are going to be noble friends. They're not going to be those who come up to you and say, scratch my back and I'll scratch yours. Because when you live amongst hurt people, they're only out to get something from you. And it's not their fault for doing so. Remember, a vexed mind is always looking for relief. It's not their fault. There are no such thing called bad people in this world, ladies and gentlemen. There are only ignorant people. Ignorant people, ignorant of the Dhamma. And wise people who are wise of the Dhamma. That's it. These are the two kinds of people you find in society. The long and short of this is, I want you to experience what I am experiencing right now. You come up here and you worship me. You know how much compassion I have towards you when you do that. All I wish for when you do so is, why doesn't this person, why can't this man, why can't this woman, why can't this child take the next step so that they can experience the same bliss that I do? I want to offer that. If I could offer it on a plate to you, I would. But unfortunately, I can't. You can't force Nibbana on anyone. It has to happen within them. And if it doesn't work out, then so what? You're not taking a gamble. What if you know, people get married. If it doesn't work out, what do? Yes. They get divorced and sometimes they go and find another partner. That's okay. In fact, before you got married, did you study your partner as much as you're studying the Dhamma now? Go on. Answer that. I've been teaching the Dhamma to you for the last 30 odd weeks. Yeah? I've been telling you what the monastery is like. I've been telling you what the sasana is like. I've been telling you what the monks are like. I've been telling you what the anagarikas are like. I've been telling you what the bliss of understanding the Dhamma is like. I've been telling you who the Buddha was. I've been telling you what the Sariputta Thera was like. For 30 odd weeks and then some, I've been sharing with you what the bliss of the sasana is all about. How many weeks did you actually study in this detail, with this level of detail, the partner that you decided to spend the rest of your life with? You learned about him after you got married to him, right? You learned about her after you got married, but then it was too late. You couldn't change anything about it. But here, I'm laying it all out to you. But that jump you make because you have Chanda. That's why. The first of the prejudices. That jump you make. Yes, you still have fear. You still have fear. What if he cheats on me? What if he's not who he claims to be? What if his parents mistreat me? You have these fears, but you have the other prejudice. Number one, Chanda. Desire. Great desire to be with that person. So therefore, you just make that jump. And then you learn to swim. I mean, there are two ways you can learn to swim. One is, you can learn it in a book, how to swim. Buy a book on Amazon or something and learn how to swim. It will show you all the moves. So you stand on shore and move your arms, move your legs and learn how to swim. And then jump, and then you realize you hadn't learned anything at all. Second way is just jump. Jump and start moving your arms and legs around. Before you know it, you'll be swimming. Besides, you're not jumping into a river with no one else in there. There are plenty of people who have jumped before you. This fear is only valid if you are a Buddha. Nobody to show you the path. Nobody to guide you. Nobody to inspire you. Nobody to raise you up when you fall. But now, there are plenty. At last count, 420, just at our monastery, permanent residents, How many more do you need? How much more assurance do you need? How many more people do you need to go and share your problem with when you have a problem? And guess what? When you go share your problem with them, you get the right answer. Whereas when you go and share it with your friends, I'm down. My boyfriend, he dumped me. What do your friends say? Let's go watch a movie. Huh? What? Shall we do a takeaway tonight to cheer you up? Come on. How does that solve problems? That's why they are not happy either. So when they go through that experience, you have to do the same for them. When they get dumped, now you have to buy them pizza. When you get dumped, they buy you pizza. So buying pizza doesn't work. Is that not evidence enough? There are young people in this room, and I don't know, for some reason, maybe I'm seeing quite a few young faces today, and I speak to you, young girls, young boys, you know, young men, young women. You are still, you know, age is still in your favor. Before long, you're going to be like the rest of them. And then it's going to be too late. I know there are many men, women here who are past the age where, you know, now their bodies are not going to support them on this course. Now everything is just going against them. If they were given the choice to exchange their life with you, they would. If when you listen to the start and listen to the Dhamma, you were past your prime age, right? And you were given the choice to either turn the clock back or exchange your lifetime or the lifespan or the life you have left with someone who has more life left than you, would you not take that choice? You certainly would. There are plenty of nods in the room. Because now you have learned from making the mistakes yourselves. Are you waiting till then? There are two ways in which you can learn. Learn from others. There are plenty of others in the room. Or learn it yourself. But then you have to pay the price. This is going to be a hefty price. So wake up. I'm not saying it's entirely impossible to do Nibbana, living a lay life. It's not. I wouldn't say that because it is not true. It is, but it's incredibly difficult at the same time. For one reason alone. To become extraordinary, you have to do extraordinary things. To do extraordinary things, you have to associate the extraordinary people. To associate extraordinary people, you have to live amongst them. Otherwise, why did the Buddha create this asana? You've got to ask, right? Why couldn't he have just gone around the country preaching the Dhamma and advised people to stay in their lay lives, live their lay lives and just carry on practicing the Dhamma? Why didn't he just do that? He could have just created maybe 20 odd monks or so and asked them to go, you know, charita bhikkhave charitam bahujana hitaya bahujana sukhaya, go spreading the Dhamma and then let people understand the Dhamma, let them live lay lives and practice the path and attain Nibbana. Why didn't he just say that? When his young child came and asked him, "Venerable sir, are you going to give me my inheritance?" He said, "Yes, let's go." Why? What did the young prince not have? Couldn't the Buddha come and preach to him every day? If King Suddhodana wanted, could he not send his child to the monastery and learn the Dhamma like sending him to the Hampasa and bring him back every day? But he only went on to become Rahula, the great Thera. Rahula, the great Arahant Thera, because of a noble association. Because you know what? His teacher was the Sariputta Thera. His new siblings were Ananda Thera, Moggallana Thera. Noble association. You are the five people you spend most of your time with, ladies and gentlemen, whether you like it or not. The things you do in your life is all the things that the five people around you do. Their resultant effect is you. Because the five people around you, they keep pulling you in five directions. Where you stand today is the net result of that. I ask you, while the Buddha Sasana still prevails, while you still have age on your side, while you have vitality and youth and vigor on your side, Because here's what happens later on. Is what happens with my parents, with my grandparents now. They can't stay up during a sermon. I speak to them individually. I don't give you individual talks. I give my mother and father an individual talk. But they can't stay up during the talk. Because it's not because they don't want to. Of course they want to. But age is no longer on their side. 10 minutes into the talk, they start dozing off. So how can they understand the Dhamma? How can I make a solid argument to them? How can I explain to them anicca, dukkha and anatta in one sitting? Now it's incredibly difficult. So I have to keep waking them up. And when I wake them up, I say, no, I didn't fall asleep. So how can you wake someone up who doesn't believe that they haven't fallen asleep? I can't fix them now. It's too late. But like I said, my heart used to be this small. I could only fit Amma and Appachi in there. It's not longer like that. No longer like that. If I can't fit the two of them in there, fair enough. Out. You can all come in here. It's as big. It's very big now. I can fit all of you in there. So I can, by which I mean, I can look at you and talk to you, speak to you, and have compassion towards you in the same way that I do towards my parents. So I ask you, save yourselves, because if you don't, there is no one to save you. If you still have what it takes to make this jump, don't let fear get in the way. How do you know it's going to be difficult if you haven't tried it? Maybe you're worried about the social stigma. Perhaps that is what it is. What will people think of me? What will people say? Do I have to lose all my hair? No. I'm not asking you to become a monk or a nun. I'm saying come and spend some time. See what it's like. And if it works out for you, then fair enough. If it doesn't work out for you, so what? Nothing ventured, nothing gained. Think of it as a course. You come and do a 1 year course. If it doesn't work out, so be it. At least that 1 year, you spent a virtuous life. You earned lots of merit. You've at least given a fighting chance. At least you have realized who you are as a Buddhist. Otherwise, you're going to live a life claiming to be a Buddhist because there's a sheet of paper somewhere that says you are a Buddhist, but on your deathbed, someone's going to ask you, what is so Buddhist about you? And you're going to say, I don't know. I didn't spend time to figure that one out. You're experts in your professions. You're an expert daughter. You're an expert son. You're an expert mother. You're an expert father. Yes. You're an expert boss. Yes. You're an expert teacher. Yes. But you are all Buddhists as well. Are you an expert in that? What is your expertise in that? How much do you know what Buddhism is all about? To know that it has to have changed you. It has to have transformed you. For that, you've got to allow it to do that. The more people that walk in through those gates is just more of a burden to me. So I'm not asking you to come in because I want to increase my number. I'm not looking for followers. Because every man, woman and child that walks through those gates, I'm responsible for them. We have to look after them. We have to give them the number. We have to give them a teacher. We have to feed them. We have to give them shelter. We have to give them clothes. Because from that point on, no one's going to be there for them. We have to look after them. Yes, of course, we have our devotees, parents of the monks, anagarikas and so on, who look after us. But their responsibility becomes wholly ours. All you got to do is come and practice the Dhamma. But every year, if you keep procrastinating it, there's going to be a time where it's going to be too late for you. So don't keep putting it off. I know this does not apply to everyone here, but for some reason I thought I should say my piece. But for those of you who are either unable or because... Sorry, I'm so sorry. I'm really sorry. For those of you who are unable to join us, because by joining us, I don't mean coming and joining us. I mean, you know, saving yourselves. That's what I mean by that. Because of your duties, obligations, whatnot, right? Commit some part of your life towards this cause. I'm not asking you to become my follower. Please. When I have understood that this is nothing more than a chitta, why would I ask you to become my follower? That's not what I'm asking you for. And I'm not your savior either. I introduce the savior to you. That's it. I just carry the message. What you need is noble association. What we all need is noble association. The Buddha, Dhamma and the Sangha, if you claim to be the only refuge that you have, then let it be the only refuge you have. Until you do so, you know, you say Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha are my refuge, but you don't let the refuge take you over. Then how can it make an impact on your lives? I mean, give yourselves a fighting chance. Let the Dhamma work for you. I don't know how else I can put this. Because I know you're all going to die. Don't you? Some of you are going to die before me. Some of you are going to die with me. Others are going to die after me. But you're all going to die. Folks, when you're dead, I'm not going to be saying this to you. I promise. You'll only hear me going on about this like a broken record until you are dead. At that point, I'll let you rest in peace. Then what is your refuge? Who's going to save you then? I mean, you're human beings. You have the potential for greatness. You have the potential for ultimate bliss. We have the Buddha Dhamma. Just live one day virtuously. Live one day with the Dhamma. That is what I want to give you on the 4th of February when we will be visiting the monastery. For those of you who will be visiting us on the 4th of February with the meditation program, I want to immerse you in the Dhamma for that one day, because that is all you give me. You're very stingy, aren't you, when it comes to giving up your days to the sasana? One day? Just give me one day. Because that one day lived with the Dhamma is far greater in value than 100 years you will have lived without it. And you're not even going to live 100 years. None of you are. So that one day is going to be the best day of your life. But give yourself up wholeheartedly. In fact, I invite you, when you come that day to the monastery, those who do, come with a firm resolve. If I understand the Dhamma, if I get it, if I really grasp this concept, I will stay. Come with that resolve, because then you are doing it properly. You and I both know you are coming for a visit, but get that out of your head. Because if you do it properly, you know, whatever you do in life, do it properly. Do it 100%. Don't do anything half-hearted. If you're doing it half-hearted, don't do it at all. Step out and let someone else do it. If you're doing it, do it 100%. If you want to become a mother, do it 100%. Don't do a half-hearted job. In your workplace, in your profession, do it 100%, because there are plenty more queued up outside with their CVs in hand who are willing, more than willing, to come and take your job and do it for half the price. For half the pay, they will do it. There are plenty of people queued up outside. So if you're doing your job, do it 100%. If you promise her to keep her happy and you bring her home, do it 100%. Whether she is happy with it or not, that is her problem. But you do it 100%. Because if you don't, there are plenty of people outside who are willing to take her. and to keep her happy. Don't take anything for granted. If you take things casually, especially the important things in life, if you take them casually, then you become a casualty. My mentor taught me that. Don't take anything casually. If you do it well. Otherwise, step aside. That's what I learned at school as well. Diske or diske de. Either learn or get the hell out. So I say, on the 4th of February, when you will be coming there looking for your independence, come looking for your independence. Come and do it wholeheartedly. Don't do a half job. If the Mahasangha, who will be looking forward to speaking with you, looking forward to welcome you and embrace you, if they are able to give you the elixir of Dhamma, if you taste it and you realize the beauty of it, if you understand it, ladies and gentlemen, come with a resolve that you will not be going back. I mean, you know, you are embarking on a journey that's going to get you to the end of suffering. What more do you want? It's going to get you to the end of suffering. You don't have to cook again. You don't have to cry again. You don't have to weep again. You don't have to grieve again. Don't have to go building houses again. Not just this birth, but in any birth to come. Do you remember how difficult it was to build yourself a home? Do you remember how many people you had to go after just to get some paperwork done? Just to get the loan? Do you remember how difficult it was to get yourself a job? All the interviews that you had to face? And how people would scorn you and mock at you? Do you remember the queues you had to stand outside sometimes in the hot sun? Do you remember the times you had to beg just to get what you want? Maybe to get yourself a visa to fly somewhere, to get to another country looking for greener pastures, only to realize that happiness wasn't there. Take it from someone who's done that, I tell you. You know, you have the liberty of speaking to the Mahasangha who's been through much of the experiences that you've had and some experiences that you're looking forward to have. You have that advantage. You have the advantages of hearing from a Swamin Mahansa who has gone through these experiences in life. So I know that they don't hold what they claim to have. They don't have it. They're just empty vessels. So don't go looking for them if you are thirsty. They're empty vessels. You will just be exhausted. It's like going after a mirage. Just like going after a mirage. You'll keep running every time you see that there is water. You think there's water. It's only a mirage. There's only one place you can find ultimate bliss. Like the Buddha said himself, if I could find bliss in a grain of sand, he says, if there was happiness in a grain of sand, I would quit my job as the Buddha right now and retire and enter Parinibbana. If there was happiness in a grain of sand, there would not be a Buddha at all, he says. If it comes from the Buddha, what more assurance do you need? This is the Buddha that you, your mother, your grandmother, your great-grandmother, and her grandmother, all of them brought their hands together in veneration. That Buddha statue that you have at home, it was there in your mother's time, in your grandmother's time, in your great-grandmother's time, in your great-great-great-grandmother's time. It was there in every mother you've had. They all brought their hands together in veneration. This is the Buddha that says, if there was happiness in a grain of sand, I would not preach the Dhamma. So the fact that he preaches the Dhamma for the rest of his life, 45 long years, going around the country, traveling the world, preaching the Dhamma, he did so because he wanted to free people from the suffering that they are trapped in. The pleasures that you enjoy in life, these are the traps. These are the traps. I need you to understand the concept, ladies and gentlemen, which is what I'll be spending much of our time with at the monastery during our meditation program, to convince you that the pleasures that you experience in life are all just lies. Come prepared to accept the truth. But don't take anything just because I say so. You will have plenty of opportunities to analyze the truth, apply it into your life, and see if it makes sense to you. But come prepared to do that. So it's not just a retreat where everything we are going to do, you just have to come and sit down and just pass away the hours. That's not how it's going to work. Because our Swami Mohan says, our Anagarika Mahatmyas, they're preparing themselves as we speak to welcome you there and to give you a run for your money. They're prepared to give you the best they can. I need you to come and do the best you can. Come prepared. Don't do this, but if I were you, I'd write off my property to somebody else and then come. Because what if you decide to stay? You need not go back and worry about all those things. Let them sort it out. That's what you're going to have to do when you go anyway, right? Go where? Yes. You can only laugh about it now because you think I'm not talking about death. But you're all going to die, ladies and gentlemen, and I want you to experience this truth before you do. Promise you, I'm not going to talk to you after you're gone. Promise you. Embrace the teaching of the Buddha. This is the only refuge. That's why I say wholeheartedly, Natthi me saranang anya, Buddho me saranang vara. The Buddha was not out of his mind. He wasn't. He was the perfect one. He knew it all perfectly. He spent eons in samsara trying to figure this out. Try to find the key to unlock the door. And he did. That key he has been passing on through the noble lineage. Thanks to our teachers today, we have managed to grasp hold of that key. And I present to you the key. But I can't open your door for you. I can only give you the key. You've got to take it and then turn it. That part you have to do. If you turn it and the door opens for you, you'll experience a bliss like none other. This bliss that I speak of, humans are not entitled to it. Devas are not entitled to it. Brahmans are not entitled to it. No one in the 31 realms of existence are entitled to it. Only Aryans are entitled to it. This is the bliss that I speak of. Why don't you entitle yourself to that bliss? Transcend humanity is what I'm asking you to do. Transcend humanity. You were born humans, don't die humans. You understand what I mean? You're just human, that's it. So, you came out of a mother's womb. By virtue of that, you're human. Step outside that. Go beyond humanness. Go beyond devaness. Go beyond brahmanness. When the Buddha was asked, Venerable Sir, are you a human? The Buddha says, No, I'm not a human. Well, are you a deva? No, not a deva. Are you a Brahma? Not a Brahma. What are you? I'm a Buddha. When I say the word Buddha, how does that resonate in your ears, in your hearts, in your minds? Buddhahoti vachanang setta. Buddhahoti padamuttamang. Buddha is the greatest word there is. You think I'm speaking of a man, but we've discussed before. We've spoken about this before. I speak about not the Gautama Buddha that there was. I speak about the Buddhahood that he achieved. I speak of the Buddhahood that he experienced. I speak about ultimate bliss. But if you see it as the Buddha, fair enough, that's not bad either. Nattitena saman loke anyang sota rasayana. There is no other word that brings more delight, more bliss, more glee and more happiness than that one word, Buddha. But this can only make sense to you if you understand what I mean. Has Buddha happened within you? Oh, how I wish I could take it out of my heart and give it to you piece by piece. This joy that I speak of. You all are entitled to it. Go beyond, transcend humanness. We can do it in this lifetime, ladies and gentlemen, because you started now. Don't give up now. You started now. I speak to particularly to the young people in this room. If you're this side of 100, you're still young. But if you're this side of 40, you're particularly young. If you're this side of 40, come on. What are you waiting for? What are you waiting for? Death is catching up with you. Then you have no one else but yourself to blame. Come on. I'm showing you a greater happiness that lies just on the other side of the fence. It's just on the other side. And if you jump on the other side and it doesn't feel good, you can always jump back. There are those who do that, and we have no worries about that. But you know what? They will have given themselves a great chance to earn lots of merit, because ultimately this merit set is going to bring you to a good place. Let the howlers howl and the hooters hoot. So what? It's not your life that they're living, is it? And it's not their life that you're living. You've got your own life and you have to be responsible for that. So don't let others completely determine and decide what you need to do with your lives. Take responsibility. Because whatever comes your way is your own doing. So when you come in on the 4th of February, come prepared. Come with a full heart, open mind. Let the Dhamma heal you. Let the Dhamma penetrate you. Let it pierce through your veil of ignorance. Let it sharpen your sword of wisdom. Let it. Embrace it. Let it help you find who you really are. Awaken to the truth. If you are still suffering, you haven't found the truth. Men, women, all over the world, if they have found the truth, they have found how not to suffer, no matter what goes on around them. There is a way that it can be done. There is. Trust me. There's a way it can be done. If there wasn't, I wouldn't waste your time. Trust me. Honestly. I'd have better things to do with my own life. As you know, I didn't come into robes because I had nothing better to do. I was a very successful person in my lay life. So the only reason I came into robes was because I realized this is the only path to real happiness. Everything else was merely a means to an end. That end was just death. You know, people live their lives just doing things until they die. That's all. One's a mother until she dies. One's a father until he dies. One's a doctor until he dies. One's a lawyer until they die. The other one's a banker until he dies. Everything is until you die. You're the richest man in the world. Go on. You're the richest man in the world. Yes? Until you die. You have a house on the moon. Go on. Until you die. So what's the point? Well, you're an arahant. Until you die? You understand the Dhamma. Until you die? No. Only thing that's worth doing. If I didn't believe so passionately about this, I wouldn't be speaking to you and wasting your time. I promise you that. I know you're all very important people. You're all busy people. Committing one of your Sundays to this cause, I know, is a big deal. In fact, all of you being here is probably affecting the gross domestic product of the country right now. So others would much rather you spend your time outside this place doing your endeavors, doing your business, running your shops, doing whatever. But you have committed your time here. I understand that that is a big investment the entire nation is making. So I want results. I want results. I'm not just here for a chat or a chin wag. I want results. I'm doing my part. I need you to do yours. This is not a gamble you're taking. It's not like throwing the dice to see what happens. You're going to lose everything. You're not going to lose anything, trust me. Because death is going to make you lose everything anyway. Right? So here, you're not going to lose anything. You walk into a casino. Think about this for a second. You walk into a casino with some money in your pocket. They let you gamble. They let you play. They let you take your winnings. But there's one rule with this casino. You're not allowed to take anything when you leave. At the exit, they stop you. They check you head to toe. You can't take anything you didn't come in with. So if you take your money, whatever, so you take $100, you can leave with $100, nothing more. But if you went in and you spent your $100 and you got nothing in return, now you got nothing to leave with. So you can only leave with either what you came in or empty-handed. This is the condition. How many of you would want to go and play in that casino? But while you're there, you can play. You can play on the fruit machines. You can play the games. You can throw the dice. You can play roulette, whatever you want. Do whatever you want. But when you leave, you can only leave with either what you went in with or nothing. Who wants to go and spend time there? You're spending 60 years there. You've already spent. You've already spent 70 years there. You've already spent 40 years there. You've already spent 25 years there. I spent 28 of my good years there. Oh, how I wish I came across this when I was 8. I would have saved 20 years of my life. Oh, how I wish. But hey, merits would have it that I was only supposed to come across this at that age. But now, I'm not prepared to waste a single moment. Certainly not wasting your time. I believe in this. Not because my teacher said so, because it's true. I'm reaping the results of it. I'm enjoying the taste of this delicious fruit, and it's yummy. Therefore, I'm asking you to take a bite. So come. Come and experience the bliss of the sasana. You have no idea how lucky you were just to be born Buddhists. At least you began to wonder, what is Buddhism about? What is this thing called Buddhism? In fact, if you were born to another religion, chances are, but there are those among you who've been born to another religion, but you've come along, you wanted to understand the truth. Because other faiths, other religions, they didn't give you answers to your problems. They didn't help alleviate the suffering that cursed your hearts. So therefore, you came looking for answers. Like I said, this is not a religion I speak of. I'm talking about a philosophy. It's like physics. It's like chemistry. It's like biology. This is a science. This is the science of the mind. That is what Buddhist philosophy is. So I'm asking you and inviting you to come and take a course, a one-year course that teaches you the science of the mind. What's so wrong about that? Only a few conditions, though. You don't get to watch TV. But instead, we teach you how to find ultimate bliss without watching TV. How's that for size? Even if you did go back home, you don't need a TV now. Even if you did go back home, you don't need a TV. Isn't that going to save you money? Even if you did go back home, you don't need to now have parties to keep yourself happy. You don't need a 7.1 subwoofer system to keep yourself happy. You don't need that now. You're happy. Even if you did go back home. There's nothing to lose. This is the Buddha Sasana. Come on, don't you believe in the Buddha? This is the Buddha Sasana. There's nothing to lose and all to gain. Come and experience it. That is all I can tell you, though. If I could open your mouth and hold your jaws like this and feed this to you, I would. You know, like how they force feed the ducks to get foie gras out of them? If I could force feed the Dhamma to you, I would, trust me, even if it was against the law. Because once you taste it, now you're a convert. but I can't do it like that. I can only inspire you. You have to find your own motivation. I can inform you, but you have to take the jump. Take it while you still can. You know what's going on in the name of the Buddha Sasana around the world right now? Right? All the things that are going on in the country? You will know this more than I do. I don't really know what people tell me. Right? Sometimes monks, well, you can't call them monks, but role bearers who behave in very, I better be careful, in ways that make people lose their trust entirely in the Buddha Sasana. See, this has already begun to happen. So how much longer can you wait until the pure Buddha Sasana deteriorates and you have nothing other than just the shell? What good is the shell when I can give you the core? What good is the shell? Then we'll be left with the Kasavakantakas in the end. People who will just be a robe bearer. That's it. No virtue, no understanding of the Dhamma. They'll live worldly lives in the temple. This is going to happen. I can now see it happening. It has come so close. You know the things that are going on out there? I don't need to spell them out to you. Look at the things that people are getting away with in the name of the Sasana. But they don't realize that getting away with it can only be done in this birth. What's in store for them after that, they don't know. But still, people look at that and this is what you have. So I'm saying, you know, while the pure Buddha Sasana still prevails, ladies and gentlemen, make use of it. The water's running dry and a drought is coming. Then when you're thirsty, you will not have any water to drink. Right now, there's a little bit of water that's still left. So without making it all muddy, and before the water runs dry out, come and drink it and quench your thirst. Because once it does, you will only have yourself to blame. Then you will remember, Swami Nvahanse said so passionately, from the bottom of his heart, he invited me. He invited me to come and experience this, but alas, back then, I was far too busy looking for a boyfriend. I was far too busy looking for a girlfriend. I was far too busy looking for a job and trying to find a way to get myself to Australia or to America. But alas, the chance was there and I didn't take it when it was available. But these are the prejudices. I spoke about two of them. The other two I'll speak about another day. Experience is asana. That's all we have at the end of the day. Let's conclude for today. So, 4th of February, we are prepared to offer your independence. If you want it. There'll be a sheet of paper outside. Yes? Yes. There's going to be, I think, two sheets of paper outside. You can write your names down. Just your names. We don't need any contact details or anything. Just put your name down. Tick a box or put a yes or a no to indicate whether you're over or under 18. Because if you're under 18, we'll prepare a special program for the children as well. So the adults will have their own program. Children will have their own program. And if you also need individual chats, a private discussion, if you want that, if you have something you want to get off your chest, maybe something weighing on your shoulders, maybe something you did back when you didn't have the Dhamma, and it's just carrying that guilt is just far too much for you. And every time you listen to a sermon, you feel like, you know, how can someone like me ever understand the Dhamma? When I was so bad, when I've done so, you know, such terrible things. If you just want to get it off your chest and help you relax, you can call it a confession of sorts if you want. Then we can arrange for that as well. If you have particular questions about the Dhamma, very specific questions about the Dhamma that you want clarified, again, you can request for that. So if you want that service, then please put a tick next to it and write down the language in which it would be most comfortable for you. So we can offer it in either English or in Sinhalese. If anyone wishes to have it in Tamil, we can also do that, but we only have a few monks at the moment who can speak the language. They're still learning, but I think we can manage one or two individuals who might want that. More languages are yet to come. So one day we can say, pick one of these 13 languages in which you would like to have a Dhamma sermon. I want that day to come before I die. Honestly do. So that I can be confident and I can be happy as I close my eyes for the last time that the Dhamma has reached far and wide. And just like you all are getting a taste of this Dhamma, so are the Spaniards, so are the Englishmen, so are the Italians, so are the French, so are the Germans, so are the Australians, so are the Thai, so are the Singaporeans, so are the Japanese, so are the Chinese, so are the Africans. They should all. Because Buddhist philosophy is not for Buddhists. It's for all human beings. It helps you to transcend humanity. That's what I want you to do. Go beyond humanity. Humanness is very ordinary. There are 8 billion of us. It's so ordinary. Become extraordinary. Become an Aryan. Probably fewer than the number, than the fingers on your hand to count. Maybe several thousand. Maybe. I'm just making a guess. Aryans. People who have actually understood the Buddha's teaching and are capable of sharing it with compassion and loving kindness so that others can make sense of it and embark on the journey to freedom from suffering. Maybe a couple of thousand, if that. So if we can take that message far and wide so that every man, woman and child can benefit from it, I think the Buddha would have wanted that. Okay, let's conclude. Let us all take a moment then to transfer the merits that we have all acquired by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, inviting the Swaminarayana to deliver the sermon, listening to the sermon, as well as creating a conducive environment so that all of you could come along, sit down, and listen to the sermon in peace and harmony, as well as those online could listen to this talk as well. Let us take a moment to transfer all the merits that we have acquired to the bhikkhus and bhikkhunis, upasakas and upasikas all over the world who have since time immemorial protected and preserved the sublime teachings of the Buddha and passed it down through the generations of the noble lineage in the form of the Tripitaka, which is available today to study, understand and comprehend the Dhamma. Let us also transfer these merits to the members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including the chief prelates of all of the chapters who have dedicated their lives to the noble path and have committed themselves towards the betterment of all sentient beings. Let us also transfer these merits to the monks and nuns resident in your local temples and nunneries who have always been by your side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let us also transfer this message to my teacher, Guru Swami Nuhanse, as well as all the monks resident at the monastery and the Anagarika and Anagarika communities attached to the monastery. Let us also take a moment to transfer this message to those who make great efforts to disseminate the teachings of the Buddha, be that by translating these talks, sharing them out with others or inviting others to join them. May they all rejoice in these merits. Let us also transfer this message to our devotees and friends of the monastery, who for the sake of merits to help them attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana, continue to provide for the construction of the monastery, as well as provide the Mahasangha with shelter, arms, robes and medicines, as well as pass on their know-how and continue to extend their well wishes. May they all rejoice in these merits. By the power of these merits, may they all be healed of any physical and mental ailments and overcome any obstacles to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer this message to our mothers and fathers, brothers and sisters, sons and daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews and nieces, our friends, our acquaintances, our employers and our employees, and our teachers, as well as everyone who's gone the extra mile on our behalf, shed blood, sweat and tears on our behalf, and done everything in their power to help make our lives as comfortable as could be. May they all rejoice in these merits, and by the power of these merits, may they be healed of any physical and mental ailments and overcome any obstacles to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to the Devas and Brahmas, spirits and demons, primarily the Sakadeva, as well as all the Nimas, gods and deities who have committed themselves to fulfill the Sambuddha Sasana and to protect and preserve the Sambuddha Sasana. Let us also transfer these merits to our guardian deities who keep a watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. May they all prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path. May they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to those who have passed away in our name, our loved ones, our forefathers, our ancestors, reminding ourselves that it is in their blood, sweat and tears today we are able to enjoy the comforts of life that we do. Let us transfer these merits to all of them. Let us also transfer these merits to members of the armed forces as well as the police force who sacrifice their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation and keep us safe. May they all rejoice in these merits. Let us also transfer these merits to those who have lost their lives in the wars, be their friend or foe, as well as those who have lost their lives to natural disasters and calamities such as tsunamis and earthquakes, landslides, fires, floods, pandemics and so on, reminding ourselves that in this infinitely long journey of samsara, they will all have been mothers and fathers to us, brothers and sisters to us, friends and acquaintances to us, those who would have given up life and limb on our behalf. May they all rejoice in these merits, and therefore, out of compassion and loving kindness, let us transfer all the merits we have acquired today, as well as throughout our journey in samsara, out of gratitude to all of them. May they all rejoice in these merits, and if any of them have been born in the woeful plains, may these merits help them to free themselves from the woeful plains, redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May these merits help them abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, may by the power and blessings of all the merits we have acquired throughout the day, we be able to witness the advent of many hundreds of thousands of arahants on this blessed land. And may you and I, and everyone who's helped make this program a success, become a Arahatan Mahanse or an Arahat Theranin Mahanse in this very life itself and in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of the Noble Triple Gem be with you all. The members of the Mahasangha will now transfer their blessings to you.
Raga ginnen nidatnva, dvesha ginnen nidatnva, moha ginnen nidatnva, nibbana parama sukhayan, sukhita taravetva, nibbana parama sukhayan, sukhita taravetva, mamada siyalu loka siyalu satvayo, nibbana parama sukhayan, sukhita taravetva, nibbana parama sukhayan, sukhita taravetva, nibbana parama sukhayan, sukhita taravetva. Raga gini niveva, dvesha gini niveva, moha gini niveva, nivan sapa labeva, nivan sapa labeva, nivan sapa labeva. Tunduange suvisi ananta maha guna belen sila loka sila satyoma nibbana parama sukhen sukita taravetva. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.